This is crazy. This is absolutely insane. Such at a loss for words. I mean, I'll find them, don't worry.
Do I like playing against adversity? Man, I just like playing, period.
I'm shocked, and I'm so proud of our guys, man. Unbelievable.
Putting the crest on every single time means something to me.
Greg, welcome back. How have you adjusted? Are you recovered? How do you feel?
I feel great. You know, we had, you know, the medical team and the entire staff was amazing in preparing for this camp to make sure we were in a healthy and safe environment. So from that standpoint, we were okay. And it was good to be in camp. Great to be with the guys. And, now that after the trip home, feel good, ready to go again.
Yeah, I bet. Exciting week you guys had. So bring us into camp and let us know maybe what some of the differences that are from previous camps to this one as far as what the COVID protocols were in, what they were in place and how that affected what you guys did.
So, first off, it was really intensive testing. We got tested 10 days out, 4 days out, as soon as we arrived. And then basically almost every day that we were in camp, we were getting tested. And, you know, when we first arrived, there was this isolation period where you get to your room or you arrive, you get tested, then you go to your room until you get a negative test back. And that's just odd. You know, it's, you're excited to see everyone, excited to work with the group. And then all of a sudden, you're stuck in your room ordering room service and waiting for a negative test to come back. So that was awkward. And then, you know, it's operating with a new normal, right? That's what it is. You know, you're in pods at your tables where you eat, with the same four people every day for 9 days. There's social distance in the meetings, everyone's spread out there, it's just getting used to all that. But I think aside from that, right, so when we're on the field, it's back to soccer. And that's the fun part. Working with the guys, seeing the guys, and also seeing the group grow was really interesting to me, because when the camp first started, you can see guys are a little bit timid and the relationships aren't really there yet. And then 8 days later, all of a sudden it's like a family in 8 days. And that was the interesting thing that we've noticed.
And I know you're a big guy on culture and getting these guys to understand this is a brotherhood. This is a family. When you are playing at your clubs, it's great. And you got to train and perform at your best. But as soon as you get that email saying, hey, national team camp, you're in the roster, that excitement starts to build. And you get off the plane, you're excited to get back to the hotel and meet these guys. What was it like as you started to see these players trickle in slowly one by one, and you have all these protocols and, the video of Johnny Cardoso coming in and training by himself? What was going through your mind?
You know, I guess the staff, it's natural that everyone gets an uneasy feeling, because you want it to be this tight group right away, right? And it takes time. And that's my message to the group, is to the staff, is like, listen, guys, just be patient, just do our thing, stick to our process, and we'll be okay. These guys will get there. And we do a lot of onboarding, with messaging, with videos, with, explaining how we operate, what the expectations are for them in camp. And then it's just watching them grow and watching them, become closer as the camp goes.
The one thing you just mentioned that I'm curious about is you said even in the meal room, everybody's in their own little pods. Are those pods specific to player lines on the field? Is it they get to choose who they sit with? Are you guys choosing that? Because I feel like that's a real bond. I've been in those meal rooms. So that's a time to bond for sure. Yeah. So are you guys using that as a little bit of a strategy to get these players to know each other better?
Yeah, we set up the tables in a way that, we could build relationships, foster relationships. We wanted diversity in the tables. We thought that was very important. And then just guys, getting to know each other. We wanted some, it to be uncomfortable a little bit in the beginning for the players. Because if you give them the option, it's the same four guys, and they stick together, and, you don't build these other relationships. So we wanted to purposely have the players step outside their comfort zone and meet new people and foster new relationships.
So realistically, you had the full group in camp for about a week. It's a very short window of time together. A lot of new faces, you're trying to get them up to speed. What were you focused on during those early days together?
We just had to be really precise with our training, really accurate with the points we wanted to hit, what we were trying to teach. And that was really important. You know, I think the focus was on build up from midfield in the first session. And the second session was, you know, high pressing. So we really, I mean, we had to be really, I think, precise with the exercises and make sure that they were going to bring out what we wanted to train. Because we had limited time, you know, we were joking with the staff that, you know, the day before the game was when we first introduced high pressing and we had 12 minutes total to work on it. 12 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, that's what we're dealing with.
Hey, so you know you can do it at any time, any place, if you can accomplish that in 12 minutes, right?
So basically what it is now is, you know, you're doing the training, you're analyzing the training, and then you present the training, you're checking for understanding, you're talking to them the whole time, and then, you know, the day of the game, I'm having to do a video session reviewing the training the day before and what was good and what we could work on in preparation for the game that night. Mm. I mean, we just had to do it. I couldn't let it go. You know, normally I'm giving my pregame talk and this time we have to analyze the training, but you know, we were able to do it. And thankfully the players, you know, were really good in understanding and able to take in information quickly. And that really helped. And then a lot of it comes down to effort. You know, what we said is, guys, it's not going to be perfect. And it's how do we deal with the moments that aren't perfect, you know, and they made up for it by effort.
So quickly on that, let's give people a comparison. If you had this team for whatever amount of time you wanted to, and you were working on that building out of the midfield or that pressing, what would you allocate time-wise to work on that? Because I think that juxtaposition is really cool for people to understand.
Yeah. So a good example is like a January camp, right? And in January camp, you know, we'll work on the phases of play build up from midfield for a week, for a whole week. And we'll be able to, you know, to work it, train it, analyze it, train it again. You know, then we'll put it against an opponent. You know, we'll have a friendly game, then we'll analyze it again. And we won't move on and it will last about 7 days. You know, we did high pressing. We did like mid-block defending to high pressing in January camp for like 8 days, 9 days. You know, because we had that time. So when you're planning the camp, you can really, you know, plan out the tactical periodization really well. And this, you're talking about literally half a session that you have.
So you start the Wales game. What were your expectations? What did you think you were going to see? Because I think from our standpoint, we were like, wow, this doesn't look like it's nine new guys, you know, together in camp. This looked like a team that played together multiple times.
Yeah, so the biggest confidence you get as a coach is when you know the team is 100% prepared. Then you're confident, right? Then, okay, the team is prepared. They can execute what we're asking them to execute. And to be honest, I didn't have that 100% confidence. You know, it just didn't, because I couldn't. It wasn't enough time. You know, but what I was seeing, and when you're talking to the players and you're asking them questions about what you're looking to do, you know, you're getting the right answer. So I had a certain level of confidence, but it wasn't 100%. And then in the game, you know, what we were trying to execute, like we could see it. And that's what I took the pressure off the group by saying, listen, again, let's not focus on perfection here. There's certain elements of the game that we're looking to see. Let's see these. And we did. And that was a good part of it. You know, the one thing that we didn't do that I was disappointed was running behind the back line. We didn't threaten their back line nearly enough. And that was, you know, frustrating, but I think from all the other standpoints, we did a good job.
In that game specifically, six players get their debut, get a clean sheet. What performances for you stood out that day?
You know, we were focused on creating a 3v2 and build up for midfield. And I think the center backs did a good job, particularly John Brooks did a good job of controlling their forward and finding passes between the lines. I think that worked well. I liked the midfield shape pressing. I thought they did a good job. Even when pressure was broken, recovering, I thought was excellent. You know, I thought Sebastian Leggett performed his role in a way that we were looking for. I think he did a good job of that, coming down into midfield to be the extra man. You know, so overall, I think there was a lot of strong performances.
Can you talk about the skill set of Yunus Musa? You know, not really known before, you know, you announced him coming into camp. Then people started checking out his videos and like, whoa, this kid's legit. He makes that first debut and you see him buzzing around, getting on the ball, showed a number of qualities in his first match. What excites you the most about what he can do?
I think he's, you know, first of all, he's a great kid. I mean, like, you always love to work with guys like that, you know, such a good attitude, always smiling, really positive mindset, and just fun to work with. But then from his skill standpoint, you know, very secure on the ball, very, very quick, you know, like, really, he's doing some stuff in training that just was incredible. So really quick on the ball, really good ball control. Calm, you know, calm under pressure, can deal with any type of pressure that's thrown at him when he's on the ball. Good engine, good defensively. You know, so he's got a lot of really strong attributes that can make him a really good player. And, you know, to one thing in Valencia, he plays wide right in a 4-4-2. And we always talk to him about, you know, being a central player, and he likes being a central player. So for him, it was nice to now play in the middle of the field where he really sees himself long-term. I know he appreciated that.
I want to stay in the midfield because another player that impressed me not only in the Wales game, but in both games is Weston McKennie. And this is a player you've worked with before. He made his move to Juventus, but I'm curious if you've noticed a change in his game and his demeanor and his confidence since he's made that move and really expanded his game to this next level.
He's definitely more confident. You know, we can certainly see that. I think from his game standpoint, I think he's improving. You know, Schalke was difficult for him to always play different positions and being moved around the field. And I think now he's settling into this midfield role. He's got, you know, a tremendous engine, really good acceleration, really good quickness, really strong in the tackle. You know, a very like prototypical number eight. And I think he does a great job that he arrives in the penalty box. I think sometimes, you know, there's a certain amount of where you want to rein him in a little bit with his movement, right? Be a little bit more precise with where he's running. But overall, really good, you know, brings a really great energy to the team.
Well, that's funny that you say that because there was times where I was like, he was just over on the right side. Now he's on the left getting in behind. It's like he was literally everywhere, especially in that Panama game.
Yeah. He is. He's got an incredible engine. I love the fact that it doesn't look a wild like it used to. Now it looks like it's all movements that he's supposed to make. And you talked about Sebastian Lletget coming in, you know, playing the false nine, coming in, helping the midfield, but you didn't have that deep threat. You saw in the match against Panama, Sebastian Soto coming in as a substitute, but also Jokini getting the start, both scoring goals. Did that surprise you? Was that, you know, were those players that you're like, I could have played them against Wales now thinking about it? Or just at that moment, you just felt, I got to go with this type of player, this skill set that's going to give us the best chance to win?
Yeah, no, I think it was a game plan specific tactic that we used to have a guy, you know, we thought their center backs were going to be very man oriented. We want to pull them out of position, and we know how secure Sebastian is in the ball. So if you have those two things, you know, it can be a real threat to the opponent because now that they do leave the line, they do come out of position, but now you have a guy that can keep the ball, hopefully lay it off, and now you have other runners behind. I think the biggest fault we had that game was we didn't have runners behind. And that, you know, so to me, that was what we really lacked as he's pulling players out of position. Now we need to take advantage of that.
When looking at both those lineups, so now we've moved a little bit from the first game against Wales to this game against Panama. And you made a lot of changes up front. We just mentioned some of those changes in the back, but the midfield stayed the same. And you had mentioned earlier that you were working on playing out of the midfield. Is that one of the things that you looked to say, okay, can we keep it consistent here to keep those relationships building in back-to-back games?
Yeah, I mean, we wanted to keep things pretty consistent, you know. So in the back line, you know, we had Serginho played again, Matt played again. We brought Reggie in, who came in the game. You know, he's used to playing right back, so we put him there. Tim filled in for John Brooks in that game. You know, Tim did such a good job in training all week. You know, he was a guy that looked really sharp. We wanted to play him. And then up top, you know, Gio kept his position on the right, and then we changed Uli for Conrad, and then we played with a real striker. So, you know, it was supposed to be pretty consistent, and that continuity, I think, in midfield helped the guys. For sure.
Greg, one of the things that really impressed me is looking at the numbers, and I'm not typically a numbers guy, but in this instance,
whatever, you always talk about your goals. Come on, Charlie.
Yeah, maybe here and there, but you've given 29 debuts, 29 in your first 21 matches, surpassing Bob Bradley as the most by a manager in U.S. men's national team history. What does that signify to you?
Well, I think it shows that, you know, it was a program in transition, right? I mean, I think that's how you can evaluate that, you know, a program that, you know, was going to be an injection of new blood, so to speak. And then I think also us just having confidence in younger players and us having confidence that these guys can do it and get it done. And I think that's, you know, really important. I think not only the 29 players, but if you look at the age of the players, you know, it probably skews pretty young in terms of everything we're doing. So we think it's really important. We're looking at this as a long-term project. So we think it's really important to give these guys experience, you know, sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Yes.
22 years and 154 days is the average age of the starting 11 against Panama. So yeah. Talk about a positive future.
You spoke a little bit about what you learned from the Wales game and what you took away that the team maybe didn't do what you hoped for. Different result, 6-2 against Panama. A lot of goals from players who were getting their debuts as well. So really fun things to watch, not only the Gio Reyna goal off of the free kick, but then you get Sebastian Soto and Richie Ledesma connecting on a couple of goals too. I'm curious what you took away from that Panama game as to, okay, we could have done better in these areas in order to improve from that game as well.
You know, that was a really interesting game with a number of different storylines to it. And a lot of the way it unfolded, I think, was really pushed our group. So if you think about it, it wasn't a good start by us. We gave up a goal. I didn't think we came out with the right intensity. I thought we were lacking a little bit. But then after we conceded that goal, you know, it was probably the best half of soccer we played in a while. You know, it was really, really strong after that. And I really loved the mentality of the group to get back into it, score the 1-1, then score the 2-1, I think was really important. And then, you know, it showed that the group had a different gear, you know, and that was important. Then as the second half went on, I didn't think, you know, so now you talk about the second half where the opponent comes out, raised the intensity and was very aggressive, and we had to deal with that. And we had to deal with a very, very physical game. And that was fun. You know, that part of it to me was really good because we were getting pushed. And what I really like about it was the way we pulled away at the end of the game. I think that was really important to just, you know, put a final stamp on the opponent by scoring that many goals, and particularly late. And it showed that we can be pushed, we can take something, but then we could also give it back and in the end pull away like we did. So that was important. I think it was important for the guys to see what a CONCACAF opponent was like and then how these games are going to go. It's not always going to be the way we want it to go.
No, that's phenomenal. And one player that we were all waiting to see, and you played with his father, Giovanni Reyna, 18 years, 3 days, becomes the third youngest player to ever score for the U.S. men's national team. What were your takeaways with his performance? I know the direct free kick, his first international goal, but, you know, just being a young player now playing at this level, first team on the international level, what were your kind of thoughts on what you saw for him throughout camp?
So I think, you know, when you look at it, he's 18 years old, but he doesn't play like he's 18 years old. And that's the thing that I take away most from Gio, is that he has this maturity to him on the field where, you know, he sees situations, he knows where his teammates is, he knows where he is on the field. He's a player that's calm under pressure, can handle the ball in any type of situation. You know, a lot of really strong qualities that he has. You know, for us, the focus with him is how do we keep making him dangerous, and how do we get him goal scoring opportunities? How does he create goal scoring opportunities? And you know, that's something that's going to continue to be a focus with him is, you know, how is he really a dangerous attacking player? You know, I think he has so many good qualities, and we just want to put him in position to affect the game.
From an outsider, I'm going to call myself an outsider. there seems to be a coolness, like this underlying coolness factor about this team, about this group, a confidence that I would say we haven't seen from the men's national team in a bit. Example, Sergiño Dest does a snake to Meg someone at half field. I about fell off my couch. Weston McKennie, we talked about it, covering nearly every inch of the attacking half players that we're creating in a way that you were just saying, you're putting them in positions where they can be creative. Do you notice this energy about the team when you're in these situations within camp? And how would you describe the demeanor and the culture of this group?
So, you know, I think that we want to give the players confidence at all times. You know, if there's some high level players, and I think the most important thing is to give them confidence and support their game. And Sergiño is a good example of a guy that, you know, some people may say, oh, you know, why is he doing what he's doing on the field? And we love what he does on the field. We love the fact that he can play with this, you know, this style, and he can take risks. And, you know, for me, that's, you know, we support that 100%. We want him to be very aggressive going forward. We want him to be creative going forward. You know, he's like an artist, and, you know, he needs a certain amount of freedom. So that's been great. But in terms of the whole mentality of the group, I think there is, you know, there's two dynamics at work. You know, the first thing is we know we have a lot of work to do to get to where we want to go and to reach our goals. We know we're not even near, you know, our full capacity. But the second thing is there's confidence in it, and there's confidence that the players have in each other. There's confidence that the players have as a team. And I think that's, you know, that's important because, you know, if we want to do great things, you know, you're going to need confidence, but you're also going to need this humility that we're not there yet, and we need to keep pushing.
Greg, I've said, you know, after that first performance against Wales, and you see Sergiño Dest on the right, and he's doing all these tricks, and it really brings me back to Dani Alves' days at Barcelona. I'm like, don't move him from the right. He looks so good. Don't move him to the left. He goes to the left, and he still has a performance where he's making an impact and doesn't look out of place. What goes into that decision of where he is long-term, right or left?
There's a lot of things. I mean, the first thing is we think about his quality and how his quality can help the team. And then we think about, you know, what do we need against this opponent and what's going to be important. And then we think about, you know, what does the right side of the field look like versus the left side? Is one side more vertical and the other side's more combining and more coming inside? And, you know, just trying to get it right in terms of how the team can function. And I think, you know, there's always a concern when he plays on the left if you're going to get any width on the left side because he's going to come inside a lot. And I think he did a good job of overlapping at times. I think he did a good job of playing inside and then going around the outside. So there was enough that gave us confidence as a staff to say that, you know, we can still be effective with him on the left.
Greg, thanks so much for giving us this time. We know that you just got back from camp, but the work continues and it rolls on. We hear your emails dinging, I think, as people are probably trying to get a hold of you and as you guys work on to what's next. So, this has been awesome.
Yeah, thank you. I'm pumped. You know, I know you've done a terrific job really building out this roster, getting guys a chance to be seen. And putting them in a position to succeed. So I think you've done a great job and it's great to watch you.
Appreciate that, guys. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet.
Charlie, it's pretty cool. In the last few weeks, we've gotten to talk to both head coaches of the women's national team and now the men's national team. What a great conversation with Greg Berhalter after a really successful camp. Anything for you that really sticks out right away?
Yeah, for me, it's surpassing Bob Bradley and giving 29 debuts in the first 21 matches of his career as the head coach for the national team. And I just think, you know, he's really taking an initiative to go out and give everyone an opportunity, figure out what the right system is, what the right players are for that system. And that for me shows that he's really, you know, bought into trying to get this team to be the best it possibly can be. And so I'm pumped about that. And just 22 years old is the average age of the starting 11 against Panama. Like, what?
Yeah.
And to see, I think, like so many positive performances as well. Like, you expect it to be kind of like up and down or a lot of mistakes being made. Nope, not with this squad. So a bright future ahead for sure. What about for you?
I think those things absolutely stick out for me too. And just, I think I just feel really like we're really lucky that we get to have these types of conversations with the head coach of our national team and get to share some of his insight and takeaways from camp and what he's learned, not only about himself and his coaching habits, but with the team as well. So just such good information and, gosh, maybe some more to come sooner rather than later. And more to come with the women's national team as well. Big news on that front. It was great to see the men back out on the field and in action, but now we get to see the U.S. women's national team in action as they take on Netherlands Friday, November 27th in the Netherlands. A rematch of, yeah. You remember that? You might remember this game. The
yeah,
World
I do.
Cup final in 2019. So it will be an amazing, let's just call it a Black Friday deal, because we get to have that right after Thanksgiving and get to watch these two of the top teams in the world compete.
And that game will be at 12:30 Eastern on ESPN2 and 2DN, and will be the first for the women's national team since winning the She Believes Cup back in March. I mean, this team, everyone, just like the U.S. men's national team, now everyone's waiting for this U.S. women's national team to get back at it. And here's what head coach Vlatko Adanovski had to say about facing off against the European champions after such a long layoff.
They're a very good team, very organized, very, very disciplined team. I mean, very well coached. Serena has done an incredible job with them. And they have some great individuals. I mean, if there's a striker that you don't want to face, he's probably Miedema, but in same time, like I said, we want to be challenged as much as possible. And regardless of the outcome of the game, I know this will be a great learning opportunity for us.
Vlatko has called in 23 players for this camp, including a mixture of players from the U.S. and players that are playing in Europe. Samantha Mewis, Rose Lavelle, Emily Sonnet, Tobin Heath, Kristen Press, and Alex Morgan, who are playing in mostly in England, but Emily Sonnet is playing in Sweden. And they weren't part of that camp back in October when we got to talk to Vlatko.
For Morgan, this could actually be her first action with the women's national team since that World Cup final against the Dutch. Should she see time, it would also be her first action for the red, white, and blue since becoming a mom and giving birth to her lovely daughter, Charlie, in May.
Another, just an additional supporter in the stands too. I'm sure Charlie's going to be decked out in the red, white, and blue.
Yes.
So if you listen to this podcast, we've been talking to a number of former U.S. women's national team players who have done that same journey of going on the team, giving birth to a child, and then coming back. So we have the utmost respect for these superhero women who balance motherhood and being a professional athlete. And it's not only us. Vlatko is right there with us, giving some glowing words about Alex and her willingness to move overseas with a new baby to keep improving her game.
Nothing but respect for all the soccer moms out there and really all players who are navigating these COVID times. Now we know this will be the final U.S. Women's National Team match of 2020. Anything or anyone in particular you are most excited to see next Friday?
There's a lot of players. I think we were trying to probe Vlatko after that camp in Colorado who he was going to bring in. And
he was ducking,
some of those,
and ducking and dodging.
He was weaving everything, but we get a little taste of that. We see Sophia Smith made the roster. So did Christy Mewis. So the Mewis sisters are back in action with the national team, which could be, I think our next person we're going to have on is Christy Mewis, because we've already talked to her sister a couple of times.
you know me, anyone from Massachusetts, New England, let's get them on. So I'll be pumped to have a conversation with Christy. Also a former Boston College Eagle.
So oh, okay. Okay.
Gotta throw that
all
in there.
All the things. but besides the U.S. women's national team front, there's other exciting news with a former U.S. men's national team player that we might know pretty well, Charlie. You've got some exciting news that you have to announce.
Yes, I will be part of a talented ownership group responsible for bringing professional soccer to New Hampshire via USL League One. So, for me, I am so overwhelmed, literally, with just so many emotions. Happiness, gratitude, just being able to bring professional sports to New Hampshire to basically show these kids that it's a possibility to play professional soccer, to be involved, the exposure. just changing the lives of so many. I'm so moved and I cannot wait. We'll be dropping into USL League One for the 2022 season. So really grateful. So thank you.
I love that. So humble, but also really cool that you have the opportunity to do that. We're proud of you and we can't wait to support them. Maybe, I don't know, maybe your co-host here can get some gear.
Yeah. When that time you're going to be, kitted out. Kitted out.
You know? I love it. I love it. Well, congratulations. We're so proud of you. And that's it for us. That's this week's episode of the US Soccer Podcast. As always, be sure to subscribe, download, rate, and tell your pals, tell your friends, tell your teammates about this show. We love talking to you guys and giving you guys the inside scoop on US soccer.